Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. It's always our delight to have you jump on board with us as we face the issues day by day. We're going to be looking at a very important issue that I believe every listener needs to be involved in and needs to recognize the pitfalls and the problems with some of the things as the outgrowth of it. We're talking about today, stop the masquerade. Stop the masquerade. I'm talking about the enforcement by some of the mayors across America, some of the governors across America, enforcing the mask wearing for the general populace. Does this interfere with our constitutional liberties? Does it destroy our health? What are the real main focus issues that we need to understand? But before we get into that discussion and the dialogue, let me remind you that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. If you're out of the area code, it's 904-831-0917. Love to have you jump in with the dialogue and discussion. Got a very important guest we'll be introducing just after our monologue and ask you to call in and join in the discussion with us on the issue of the masquerade. I think it's antithetical to anything that's called liberties for we the people. I think we somehow, some way have devolved to the position that we think the governors and the mayors and those that are elected officials have the authority over us. But it's we the people that should still be in charge and not they that are wanting to do something to control we the people. Ladies and gentlemen, as we face the issues, let me remind you, as I do day after day after day, that as we face the issues, we do so based on the book of truth. It is the word of God. Jesus himself said to his disciples in John 8:31-32, if you continue in my word, then you're my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth. The truth shall make you free. And then in John 14:6, Jesus said, I am truth. And then to cap that off in John 17:17, the Lord Jesus says, thy word is truth. It's the truth of the word of God that we need to stand on. Truth is something that is not sought for, sought after, or recognized, especially as you watch the Joe Biden dilemma, as you watch the train wreck that's on its way with Biden as the Trojan horse, as you watch what is taking place in the Beltway of Washington with Nancy Pelosi and AOC and Chuck Schumer, what I call the Socialist Marxist BLM Communist Democrat Party, we're watching them shy away from and reject anything that's called truth. It was the secularist George Orwell many years ago that said, the further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those who speak it. But I challenge our listeners each and every day that we need to recognize the words of Jan Hus, the 15th century theologian and church reformer. Jan Hus said, faithful Christians, seek the truth, listen to the truth, learn the truth, love the truth, tell the truth, live the truth, and defend the truth even to death. And I believe we're growing closer and closer to today that it's going to be one of those things that from the moral, ethical, Christian, conservative, patriotic American, that we're going to have to take a stand for the truth, even if it means our life is in the lurch as a result of it. Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you watched part of the debate last night. I watched every moment of it. As I watched the debate, it was fully understood, and we recognized immediately the very seriousness of this election. Ladies and gentlemen, may I say to you, we need to support Donald J. Trump. We need to recognize all that he's done to preserve our constitutional liberties, our Bill of Rights. He's done more for religious liberties and the protection of our Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, than any other president in my lifetime, and I'm still under the 100 mark, if you will. We need to recognize and support our men in blue, that is our law enforcement. But Joe Biden couldn't even use the word law enforcement last evening. Joe Biden evaded most of the pertinent questions, and yet Chris Wallace did not drill him and force him to answer any of those questions. But ladies and gentlemen, we need to recognize we have three branches of government. We have the legislative, we have the executive, and we have the judiciary. And they have tension between the three. Our founding fathers developed it, set it up on that basis so that we'd have the control of the checks and the balances in our governmental system. But ladies and gentlemen, it is sad to see any one of the branches take full control so that you've got basically one branch of government rather than three. We need to have that balance of power, that balance of control, and that includes not only the nomination, but the quick affirmation of Amy Coney Barrett as the next Supreme Court justice. Ladies and gentlemen, she was vetted in 2017. My opinion is, and I've said this many times on this broadcast after her nomination, since she had gone through the vetting process in 2017, 3 years ago, she has an open record of how she has voted and how she's conducted herself on the bench and the appeals court in the 7th District. So as a result of that, I believe that we need to have, after the nomination is in the Senate, I believe that Mitch McConnell needs to open the Senate, introduce the nominee, and then ask for a motion to declare cloture, a second to that motion, and then cut off all debate and immediately go to the vote for Amy Coney Barrett as the Supreme Court Justice. I don't believe we need to go into a wrestling match or a performance to find out whether or not she's going to be approved. She will be approved and confirmed to go on the Supreme Court bench. But I believe we need to cut through the chase and have that done before the election. Because, ladies and gentlemen, with the process that we're watching now that's unfolding across America, we're going to find this election, as no other election in my lifetime, I believe as no other election in the history of America, where there's an attempt for the socialist, Marxist, BLM, Communist, Democratic Party to steal the election. And we've had several broadcasts on that. We'll still continue to do so before the election time. But we need to recognize that this justice needs to be seated because you cannot have a proper determination as to the outcome of the election. Yes, I believe we're going to do a throwback to 2000, where it took the Supreme Court to decide who was the president. In fact, during the Bush election cycle, whether or not it's going to be Bush or the opponent that would be seated. I believe we'll have a fiasco even greater than that. That's just my opinion. But ladies and gentlemen, our nation is in serious trouble with what we've witnessed as the complete collapse of our economy, as a result of the shutdown by fiat, as a result of the deception by World Health Organization, Dr. Tedros, and Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx. Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx on the payroll with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And as a result of the phony information coming out of the London Institute with Professor Ferguson, that used the wrong database going in. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, everything that Professor Ferguson had done year after year after year, he was always, always, always wrong with his projections. But yet his projections said that 2.2 million Americans would die with COVID. And as a result of that, the guys in the white jackets controlled the president's decision, and we instituted the shutdowns, the lockdowns. But now, ladies and gentlemen, we're a long way from that day back in February when that decision was made. By the way, February the 26th, Dr. Fauci had written the American Medical Association that masks were not needed, that we were not going to be looking at a major harmful, detrimental COVID death rate. And yet he's changed that now two or three times. Depends on whether he's being interviewed on the Communist Network News or if he's being interviewed by Fox News is the posture and the position that he takes. But he's vacillated. CDC's vacillated. They can put their website up with recommendations, and in 24 hours it's taken down. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, we're finding across America the fiat decisions by governors and mayors to introduce rather than going through the legislative process to simply introduce by executive orders some type of restrictions on the citizens in the United States of America. Ladies and gentlemen, I find it antithetical to with constitutional truth, and I'm a constitutionalist. I believe we need to take a stand, ladies and gentlemen, based on the Bill of Rights and what God's given us through our founding fathers, to say no, no, no to what I'm calling the masquerade. It's time that we, the people, gain back control of our lives rather than having a mayor that's a wannabe dictator making rules and regulations that the people have to live under. I have a sheaf of articles that I've talked about down through the weeks about the fiasco that's taking place across America with the enforcement of masks by city officials, by county officials. One instance, a lady was majorly social distanced in the stands of the football stadium of her son's seventh grade football game. She was on bench by herself. She had her mother or some family member next to her, which was okay. But the police comes in and they literally tase her, throw her to the ground, handcuff her, arrest her because she doesn't have a mask on. And we've almost come to that place in cities across the state of Florida. And so I am concerned, ladies and gentlemen, what we the people need to do. And so I'm delighted to introduce to you today as our very special guest on Let's Face the Issues. We have District 32 Representative Anthony Sabatini with us today. Welcome, Congressman, to Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate you having me on.
I'm delighted to have you on. I'm thankful for your stand and what you've done for the citizens of the state of Florida. I tell people all the time, it doesn't matter what district you represent, when you take your seat in Tallahassee, you're representing we the people of the state of Florida. And so I'm thankful for what God has you doing. And I'm delighted to see some of the things that you've done in relationship to what I call the masquerade. You not only serve as a representative in District 32 for the state of Florida, but also you are a practicing attorney. And as a result of that, you've gotten your hand in the fire two or three times, as I would call it, in relationship to the masquerade in the state of Florida. If you would, Congressman, take just a few moments to let's talk about these things. Are the mask mandates legal based on our Constitution?
I believe that they are a violation of the Florida state constitution for several reasons, but it's hard to get a judge to commit to that position because of the fact that so many judges want to defer to whatever it is the government says is the best thing to do in a so-called national emergency. And so we've had a lot of these cases, and a lot of times they've denied the injunctions because they simply don't want to strike down what they consider a valid law, but it's really the abdication of, I think, the judiciary to just rubber stamp every single thing these local government dictators are creating. They have to uphold the Constitution, and I think if they do, they'll find that it violates several parts. Like I said, one part would be the due process clause. Every law, every duly elected enacted law must have a rational basis. It must be legitimately related to a legitimate government interest. And what's happening in this case is these mask mandates have not been shown to work. You look at the jurisdictions that have had them, the cases have gone up and up and up. If you look at Miami, which has had the strictest mask mandate since April, the cases have gone completely up and only started to go down very recently when the entire state trend of coronavirus spread went down. So we know that the mask mandates are completely flawed, and they also violate your personal privacy. The government has never had a law that made you attach something to your face everywhere you go on private and public property. This is a first, and so we think that it's out of bounds.
Congressman, you're exactly right from a legal perspective, and I'm not an attorney. I like to do some armchair wrestling occasionally in that field. But I'm looking at Judge Dering, Katie Dering's order for Duval County for Mayor Curry and his new mask mandate, the masquerade, as I call it. And Dering said, and I'm quoting, "It's not the role of the judge to second guess a decision made by another branch of government about a measure aimed at protecting the general public."
How far can we take that?
Yeah,
under the guise of public safety, can we say, hey, you know, these guns are dangerous in your homes. We need to remove them under the guise of public safety. How far can they ride that rodeo?
If you take her words literally and you take what most of these judges are saying seriously, I think the example you just brought up is the best and extremely demonstrative of where that philosophy leads. They truly believe that judicial restraint means letting the government do whatever it wants. In Broward County, they have a mask mandate. They've since repealed it, but it would have allowed local government officials to enter your home, get a warrant, and enter your home if they believe more than 10 people were gathered there. That, so if you take this judicial philosophy, one that I believe is extremely misguided and irrational, and you apply it to that situation, then you have a judge that would have upheld a law saying that government can enter your home if you had too many people in your home and if they're not wearing masks. So the correct judicial philosophy is the one that was national news just last week when William Stickland IV, a judge in Western Pennsylvania, a federal judge, struck down all the coronavirus laws and orders in the entire state of Pennsylvania. Now, this is a constitutional judge. This is a guy who usually believes in judicial restraint. If the government acts and creates a law, usually you give it deference and you try to find a way to square it with the Constitution if you can. But what he found to be the case is that none of these coronavirus restrictions square with the Constitution, the state or the federal Constitution, and he struck them down. That's what judges are supposed to do. They're not supposed to be limp-wristed and lay down and let the government violate your fundamental liberties whenever they say there's a national emergency. It's completely ridiculous. And that opinion would lead to some really bad results, I think.
Absolutely. In fact, you're familiar with, I'm certain, the DOJ, William Barr. Bill Barr made the statement on three occasions, made the statement that the Constitution does not include any reset or any change of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, based on any emergency or any pandemic or any, how would you say, as I would put it, COVID-19 scenario. There's that exception, that caveat is not in our Constitution.
I think it's interesting because obviously we've seen Governor DeSantis drop all the closure requirements, the lockdown requirements across the state. However, Mayor Curry instituted for another 30 the mask mandate, and I think the language used is a cloth mask mandate. Has anybody put forward a definition of what a cloth mask is and what it is efficacious for, what benefit it gives medically in the prevention of the spread of a virus within the community?
Right. By the way, Congressman, I have with me on the set today one of our sons. I have four sons. One of them that is visiting with us from up in Tennessee has his credentials in ecclesiastical jurisprudence. That's has the credit hours in law, constitutional law, and in theology and doctrine. And so I asked him to sit in with us today since we would be talking about this from a legal perspective. So I'm thankful to have him. His name is Greg, by the way. Anthony, I'm thankful to have both of you with us today. So what both of you are saying, as I understand that, is we're finding these fiat, and I'm going to use the term that perhaps you would not, these fiat wannabe dictators issuing executive orders. How does that square with our constitutional republic, with the representative form of government? Should we have laws being made by fiat, by executive orders? Should there be a duration of executive orders that at some point in time they are no longer effective or enforceable?
Well, yeah, I believe that this law is not legal, but it's very difficult to find judges that are going to override government officials. In this case, it should have been easily struck down because it wasn't even a validly created local ordinance. It was a proclamation. Literally, the title of the document is an executive proclamation of the city of Jacksonville. So to think that you can arrest someone, force them into certain types of behavior, threaten to shut down businesses based on a proclamation, the opinion of one person, is offensive, should be offensive to every American and to the Constitution. But we found that many judges simply don't want to get in the middle of a political fight. And if it's political, they're willing to just rubber stamp whatever the government does. And that's been a failure, I think, of past governors to make sure that our judiciary is scrutinizing severely every law to make sure that if it impinges your personal liberty, that it's scrutinized and possibly shut down, but certainly not just given a free pass. And that's what's happened. I've read all the evidence and all the so-called observational evidence to support the use of masks, and there's absolutely no way that you could argue that the widespread mask mandate that exists today in Jacksonville has a rational basis.
None whatsoever. In fact, I'm sure you have done the research on OSHA, and the OSHA website said you could take the very best mask. And by the way, the pathogen is 1/10 of a micron, and the very best mask, according to OSHA website, has a 3-micron opening. And so the question would be, can that 1/10 of a micron slip through a 3-micron opening? In fact, the OSHA website, this was back in July, I don't know if they've changed that, I haven't been back on it. OSHA website said the very best mask is like putting a chain link fence over your face to keep the mosquitoes out.
Think about it. If you took that mask and took super glue and super glued the entire edge of the mask to your face so everything had to go through that mask, you literally could not stop it then. But that's not the case with these masks. Even the best, you know, N95 mask properly fitted, you still not only go out of an exhaust port, but you have openings and gaps created all the way around, and those gaps created an increased velocity. I mean, I've read research papers on it where you go, my goodness, you literally have a more dangerous effect potentially by a mask that's not properly fitted than you do not wearing a mask at all. Now, if this were serious, if the pathogen were so dangerous that people were dropping like flies, by the way, I'm not diminishing at all the 200,000 folks that have lost their lives, but think about it. If you want something that is truly efficacious for the purpose of preventing the spread of a pathogen, and it's a virus that you're dealing with, then you know they would require a full a fitted mask, a shield over that, goggles underneath that, the full robe and the gloves and the boot covers, and those would have to be disposed of every time you think you've come into a contaminated environment. And if you touch them, you need to dispose of them. I mean, think of how illogical this is to put a cloth mask mandate in place. That's a feel-good mandate.
Absolutely.
And it's not only an unlawful mandate, which makes
absolutely. Yeah, there's all types of arguments there, and it's true. They don't work. Most of them aren't even willing to. They, in the media, they'll suggest that they work, but what they'll do in the courtroom, because it's a higher standard, is they try to say, and I'll give you their example. I'll tell you why it's wrong. They try to say that in the rare case of a person being very symptomatic, coughing, sneezing, hacking, you know, blowing snot or moisture all over the place, that in that rare occurrence that the mask would stop the respiratory droplets from going more than a few feet away and then turning into aerosols, et cetera, et cetera. But all that could possibly show, an observational evidence study to show, and there was a robot and they had it sneezing and they showed how far the respiratory droplets can go, is that all that would support is the government law that says if you're clearly symptomatic, if you are visually symptomatic, you can look at the person and tell that they're sneezing, coughing, whatever it be, those persons should be required to wear masks. Even then, it would be tenable if it was constitutional or not, but absolutely, you know, it would be debatable, but probably tenable. But the truth of the matter is that would be some firm ground for them to at least stand on. Now, of course, that's not what they're requiring. They're requiring the 99%+ of our society that's not symptomatic to actually wear the mask. And what studies have shown is that the driver of coronavirus and most, if not all, respiratory illnesses that are similar to influenza is from symptomatic individuals. It's not asymptomatic individuals. The media has used the extremely rare case of an asymptomatic person transmitting the virus to scare everybody into thinking that we all need to have herd-like behavior and we all need to be treated basically like cattle. But most honest epidemiologists will tell you it's symptomatic individuals that drive the spread. So therefore, it's another reason why the masks are completely irrational for the wide public.
Congressman, let me ask you a question. I know there's one state, and it eludes me now which state. There's one state in America that they have the authority for the governor or the mayors to issue an executive order, and the duration would be 28 days. End of 28 days, it would require legislative action to pass a bill to be debated in the House and the Senate, to be debated, approved, and then signed by either the governor or the one in authority for that state, to be signed for it to become law for that mayor or governor to extend an executive order. Would you be prone to think that the state of Florida would be wise to have our legislature that would be in session in 2021 to introduce legislation with sponsors and co-sponsors that would limit the executive order power of a mayor or governor in the state of Florida with that executive order being, say, 28 days, 30 days, even 60 days. And at that point, it has to be a legislative process.
Absolutely, and it's already prepared. We have a bit of a Freedom Caucus in the Florida House of about 10 of us that are, I would say, the more constitutional conservatives. And, yes, we'll be amending Florida's statute to require the legislature to meet and vote if they wish to continue an emergency in the state above 30 days. Right now, the language in the statute says they may meet, they can meet if they wish. And right now, they're not, the leadership of the Florida legislature is not going to meet and make them continuously vote up or down on the emergency. But we need a statutory change to make it that they must meet and that they have to vote to continue it above 30 days. Because right now, there's no scrutiny on the conservatives to shut down the state of emergency and move the state forward.
Well, I am thankful to hear that. By the way, one of the things that the mayor is doing here with Lenny Curry in Duval County, he is putting the onus, as I would call it, on the merchants, requiring the merchants.
We're going to turn the merchant into the police. We're going to make sure that everybody's wearing a mask. Yeah. So you need to be our police authority for us.
Where does that fit in your wheelhouse of understanding of the constitutionality of that, either for the Florida Constitution or for the U.S. Constitution?
That's an issue that has a lot less to do with the Constitution than it does with just bad policy and bullying. What they've done is, I mean, you put it very kindly, they're asking the businesses to enforce it. What they're doing is they've bullied them to the point to say, you know, we're not going to waste our own taxpayer money on this. We're just going to have you enforce, and if not, we'll shut you down. So that's a really novel new precedent that I believe is going to be abused a lot more going forward, where the government says, you know what, most people are on private property most of the time. Let's just require the private property owners to be our special unpaid policemen. And there's probably some legal constitutional arguments of why that's bad, and it's very unprecedented. The only example I could ever give you is, you know, something like in a bar where an underage person can't, you know, you can be in trouble for serving an underage person. But other than that instance, it's extremely rare and might be unconstitutional to require business owners to become like code enforcement officers. And it's more importantly, it's just absolutely terrible policy. And it's embarrassing that any local government official that would put Republican next to their name would ever try to do something like this. And sadly, that's what you're seeing in Jacksonville and a lot of other counties and cities.
Have you seen the threat of a severing of license, the removing the licensure from a business over this issue yet? I mean, I'm not sure if that's taken place in the state of Florida or not. I know that they have shut down power and water and they've created real dilemmas in some jurisdictions.
New Jersey has been very famous about that.
Right, right. And even churches have been threatened with such things. But have you seen within the state of Florida a threat or the removal of a license over this issue?
Absolutely. What they do, whether they act on it or not, they put that power into every ordinance by saying, towards the end of the penalty section, they'll say, and any other relief, legal relief that they can see fit. So that means injunctions, getting an injunction on your business, suspending a license, a permit, this sort of thing. If you don't play ball with, you know, the local government thugs and whoever it is that's running the city, they can use a bunch of different resources to shut you down. Now, I believe they've done it in Key West. They've already done it many, many, many times in Broward. In the South Florida counties, they've been much, much worse than they have in North Florida. But they've shut down businesses. They've arrested people. They've tased people and arrested them. It's been out of control. And, we've seen it. I represented a gym owner, pro bono, and also a guy who owned a comic book store, pro bono, both who have been criminally arrested for opening up a business during the shutdown. One, back during the lockdown, he was opening a non-essential business. And then more recently, they came in and they said he had to require everyone to wear a mask. And he said, I asked them to, and some people aren't doing it. And instead of arresting them, they arrested him. So it's been completely out of control.
Congressman, we've got a top of the hour news break for 1 minute, and I know your time is very, very close for you today.
I'm walking into a restaurant for lunch now, so I have to go. But I appreciate you having me on.
Listen, we really appreciate your time and your input on it. Thank you so much. God bless you, and we're praying for you for the reelection campaign that you're in.
This is Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood from First Conservative Baptist Church and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.